Hey, hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's call on Buddhists and Butterflies. We are heading into houses 9 and 10, well, continuing houses 9 and 10, and we're working with transforming anger into its healthy role, which is that of movement, that of momentum. So if you think about the timing of this session, honestly, it couldn't be better given that it's like the day after the start of the Lunar New Year in the Chinese, New Year, we are working with the fire horse that you've heard me talk about a fair bit, I think. And sometimes the fire horse gets interpreted as this time of like hurry up, get things done, get moving again. And I'm going to suggest that that's actually how our fire burns out. I'm going to offer a slightly different take. I'm going to suggest that after all the shedding that came before with the Year of the Snake, that there's something here that you've been polishing that you may not have even known, but that it's now ready to emerge. And the fire horse is helping emergence to bring forth what you've actually been stewarding this whole time, whether or not you even knew it. It might even be a bit of a surprise to you. So not in the sense that you have to have it all figured out, but in the sense of just noticing what's sort of here, what's on the brink, what's on the edge of what actually just like wants to come through and just being with that. So far this year, if it's approached from that sort of a tangent versus a sense of I have to make something happen and hurry up and get things going. And it will provide a more of a solid sense, a stable sense, a capacity to hold what the fire horse is actually trying to emerge into your life rather than being overwhelmed with getting all the things done that you think that have to happen. I'm pretty sure I'm lecturing to myself when I say these things too, so feel free to take that all with a big grain of salt. The other thing that's happening in the astrology, which we could spend the whole hour talking about just the astrology right now. But the big one that you've also heard me talk about is coming up in 2 days' time. It's the pattern that happens at 0 degrees Sun in Aries, meaning it's like the beginning of all beginnings. And it's Saturn and Neptune coming into conjunct. Saturn structure, Neptune dreams. This cycle happens every 7 to 9,000 years, says astrologers. So no small thing that is unfolding in our lifetime. We are just, this will be the last astrology thing I talk about. We're just hot on the heels as well of a solar eclipse in Aquarius. Aquarius is essentially the planetary energy that says distance was the way that I stayed connected or stayed safe. And it's opposed to Uranus in Taurus. Sorry, Uranus in Taurus? Yeah, Uranus in Taurus, which is very much about embodiment and wanting things to be close and homey and cozy. So there's a mash up of or a collision really of what is it that you thought you used distance to support your closeness to things and seeing what's actually not at all happening in the body. What may have just been a little bit of insight without action, or sometimes it's referred to as mental masturbation of what you thought was actually here, what wasn't quite really. So it's a bit of a reality check in a way that actually helps you to ground or land into and bring into structure, bring into form what it is you're actually hungering for. That's kind of, according to Aquarius, novel, innovative, new for you. Okay, so after that all, and that's shortcutting things. There's even more going on besides that. I'm going to invite you to get comfy and cozy as I wish you a happy Chinese New Year. And as you settle in for today's session, invitation to breathe, invitation to receive, as you focus on the inhale, every breath an opportunity to drink life in. To allow its flow to emerge into the next iteration of you. And to let yourself really just be present. Every exhale, an opportunity to release. To let go. And to make space for even more presence. And as we breathe in these ways, every breath becomes an opportunity to sink a little deeper into that cushion below you. And if any part of that is pleasant, even neutral, taking time to purposely slow down, to linger, to savor here. These are really important fire horse year skills. And good news, we've been practicing them all year. And to further practice and support that all, I'm going to invite you to take a moment to scan the environment that you find yourself in. If your eyes are closed, they're welcome to roam around inwardly. You can always open them up. If you have them open, you're welcome to keep them open, scan outwardly. You have a choice, inward or outward, letting your senses go for a bit of a wander now. And as they wander, letting them drink in the things that feel pleasant, easeful, beautiful, neutral, the things that bring some sense of satisfaction or joy, or just simply aren't causing any problems. And then I'm going to invite you to ultimately let your attention, your gaze, land on one of those things in particular. See if you notice what you like the most about that in just two, maybe three, four words at most. And then invitation is to savor those things, drinking them in. And again, letting yourself linger here, letting yourself really slow down to be with them. It's almost like, not quite on a first date, but you know when after you've sort of like fallen for someone, and you're just like drinking them in? Yeah, what is it to like drink that which you find easeful, beautiful, neutral, or potentially even things that you love that you're with right now. What is it to let yourself just drink that in? Let yourself marinate in that. And as we head into our very first part of the session, we're starting off with lymphatic drainage. And we're doing it through the face, as well as into the senses and the nerves that innervate them. So the lymphatic drainage, let's back up to that, drains out our toxins, gunk, waste, low self-esteem, overthinking, overanalyzing. And as we circulate it here through the face, it's looking at how are we facing things? Are we doing it from a place of full-on yes? Are we doing it from a place of holding things back? Is there a bit of like resentment or a bit of like, I'm not so sure, I don't feel so safe here? Or is there something else? Is there a sense of delight, wonder, awe? However it is we are facing things, supporting the system in linking that into the senses, linking that into all five senses and the nerves that innervate them. And as we work with the physical sensory nervous system in the face, we're actually working with the social engagement nervous system. This is the part of us that we learned when we were being taken care of by our caregivers, especially those who were feeding us in early life, what it was like to slow down, to rest, to digest, and be held in loving connection by another. And in turn, inform how it is we relate to things in our environment. This all got formed when you were in your embryological development. It's when your very first pharyngeal arch was developing. It's like the thing that gives rise to the roughly like the nerves that run through the cranial nerves that run through the tongue. They help the mouth to swallow. They also work with a nerve that feeds into the face, the facial muscles, pardon me, that are used for chewing. For somehow that moment that became a tongue twister for me. The facial muscles that are involved in chewing, as well as can innervate a few other the cranial nerves. I won't go into the full geekiness of all of it. And there's some really hot debate right now. So if you're really into like the geeky stuff, the polyvagal nervous system is being hotly debated currently. So there's a little bit of wiggle room here. But the idea is where that was happening in the body, and that's a rough map of the area. And as we work with the train of this particular part of our body in development, there's a sense here of storing a feeling of like, why is this happening to me? And that being oriented to both victimhood as well as rejection, like a sense of like, why is this my problem to deal with again? Tying it right back to the sense of like, why is this person not quite meeting me where I want to be met in early life in attachment? And slinking as well into, I don't usually see this come up, so this is new, terrain in a way. And it's linking into the body temperature that you were being held against, and if they were felt warm or cool. And you know how we like cuddle up to get warm? There's a sense here of not being able to regulate one's own warmth, because the person that was regulating you wasn't quite the right temperature. Meaning like they either were physically cold or they were emotionally cold. Might have been one or the other. Might have been both. There's this idea of coolness, this idea of a quiet note of rejection, a quiet note of distancing, a quiet note of stay over there. And a quiet note of that's the intelligent thing. We're only supposed to get so close. And being taught that as a form of protection, because the person teaching you that, that's what they learned, and that's what they knew. So they did the very best they could in offering you that, and also created some challenge, some issues, some holding back, some tendency within your own face, within your own nervous system of all the senses. To sometimes hold back how it is you're facing sensual pleasure. The things that bring a sense of ease, joy, delight, wonder, awe, beauty, satisfaction, satiation, warmth. Yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating too. That's linking into, in turn, stay with me now. It's linking into the sensation of the scalp. Like, how does your scalp feel? Does it feel numb? Does it feel like it's crawling? Does it feel like it's alive? It may not be something you really think about. When our cranial nerves are getting innervated or reoriented, or there's some sort of a change to them, where we feel it often is in the sensation of our scalp. Maybe it's kind of itchy. Whatever it might be, there's a sense of agitation or irritation in some way, shape, or form, or a numbing out to that, a covering up of that. In particular, if it's been unpleasant for too long. And again, this is linking into babyhood, it's linking into cradle cap. Okay. And a sense of that feeling, as a baby, a sense of that feeling protective to have that. And a sense of feeling almost like armored to have the cradle cap sort of crusty stuff, which is not the fancy name for that. But the sense that there was some level of protection of almost like a helmet, almost like an armoring, almost like a I have what I need to be able to face this cool connection that I'm experiencing and to deal with the fear of that. So we're actually releasing from the fear that's underlying all of that And then that's linking into the type of anger, rage, which sometimes is felt more so for many people as depression or sadness. Really common that that happens. And that feeling like the anger, rage, sadness, depression, I'm gonna lump them all together, playing out in the liver and in turn creating a sense of shutdown in the system, going, I don't want to take this in anymore. So I'm going to find reasons to get mad at situations or mad at people and say like, oh, they don't meet me where I want to be met, so I'm not going to take it in anymore. To the point where it becomes an easy trigger to push, an easy trigger to go like, I'm going to blame somebody else for doing something wrong and I'm going to create up a story for them about them. And then in turn, keep myself safe because I'm going to prove once again that my world, that my environment doesn't care about me. I'm going to prove once again that I am ignored, that I am the victim, that I am somebody who is lacking in some way, shape, or form. Okay, that's linking into. It's actually linking into the septal region of the brain, which controls centers of well-being. It's a midline structure. It hangs out just below the corpus callosum, if you've ever heard me use that term before. I think I have here more than once. Maybe not very regularly, though. It's not something I often talk about. And it's a structure that hangs out in between the two hemispheres of the brain. And incidentally, it's also the storage area of our centers of orgasm. Women have four nuclei here, men only one. So women have far more capacity to find orgasmic states and energy than men do in terms of a amount of neurology that's wired here. And we're linking to the, in particular, the neutrons that are present here within the cells of the septal region. The neutrons carry neutral energy. They carry some theorize they carry consciousness itself. So they don't carry a charge. They don't carry like the electrons, negative, protons, positive. They don't carry a charge. They don't carry story. They don't carry polarization. They don't carry tension. They carry space and ease. They carry a point of presence. They carry a balanced state that doesn't require any level of upset or irritation. It's like the place that one might experience if they could live life from the understanding of the non-relative world is here. And it's in the mystery of life without us having to make up a story about us as a person or as a human to cope with the magnitude of what that means and what that all brings. That's me waxing a little bit spiritually, so you can let that part go. And as we come back to the neutrons hanging out in the spaces and places that make up this midline structure, the septal region, it's like finding a sense of well-being and allowing that to take up even more presence, even allowing that to take up even more spaciousness, and allowing that to create space enough to balance out or hold room for the charge that's present in the negative and the positive electrons and protons, respectively. And when you think of the charges, that's where the story is held. That's where we're like, I am feeling this way or that way. Versus the neutron would be like the place where the energy isn't regarded as personal. It just gets to flow through your system and animate you as an expression of the mystery of life. Okay. As we do that, we're linking the second and the third chakras together, the sexual chakra and the solar plexus chakra. And it's in part balancing out the fascia around the hips and the low back. As we basically, the idea is that like there's too much stogginess or heaviness in the second chakra, and the third chakra was drifting up. And in doing so, it created sort of a twist or a torque through the low back or the heaviness of the hips as not being well balanced. So as we bring these two chakras into connection with each other into alignment, we're also optimizing the regions that they govern, which is more or less respectively the low back and mid back, but the hips are the foundation that get impacted by it all too. So as these mid back, low back come into alignment, So too, do the hips get to release any particular fascial restrictions that are holding them out of alignment as well? Okay, we're running up permissions for those chakras, the space between them. And the words are simply, how easily can I hold this? To the point where it might not even be a holding, it's almost like just like a noticing, a lightness, a connection. But the word nonetheless is holding. How easily can I hold this? Sometimes the second chakra carries the story of there's something I need to do to be vital and feel alive and well. And sometimes the third chakra carries the story of sometimes I have to work to become confident in certain ways. We're going to link that all up to the heart chakra, which in essence carries the story that when we allow ourselves to give to humanity, to other people, what it is we're looking for, we actually then in turn orient ourselves towards it, and we actually call it in for ourselves. It's a very old principle. If there's something that you're looking to cultivate because you think you don't have enough of it, you're supposed to give it away. It often gets misinterpreted as like you're supposed to give your possessions away if you want money, or you're supposed to give something away if you want to come to awareness about a certain concept. And that isn't necessarily the case, but the principle is really more so, although that, I mean, that can work if that's what your experience was and you've had those experiences. It's not that that's like untenable, but this is more so pointing to something that's more practical and more universal and more in relationship between how does you as an individual relate to the world at large, which is simply that when you think you don't have enough of something, it means you actually already have some of it. Otherwise, you wouldn't notice that you didn't have enough of it. So, if you think you don't have enough of something, whatever that thing is that you're feeling lacking in, it means you have enough of it to know that you don't have enough of what it is you do want. Yeah. If you can recognize it in others, then that means you've got recognition of it, even if you don't have any of it yourself. You've got a spark of it somewhere, somehow. And the idea being that whatever degree you have that to offer that to the world in some way, shape, or form, as a means of then being able to orient to it and to become more present to it, which incidentally calls more of it into and through your awareness to act like almost like the awareness itself becomes like a portal to birth more of that into your conscious being and having a capacity to experience what it is you thought was lacking before. Okay, kind of a trippy concept. Be a bit of a, playfully, I'm going to say this, give me a bit of a mind fuck to drink that one in. It also means we have to overcome some of our ideas of victim, blame, the story, as I've been calling it, the negative, the positive charges, in order to find the space for what's actually really here. As we do that, we're going to also unwind a series of adhesions through the lower back and mid back, in a sense of like old habitual holding patterns in how it is you've been bracing yourself, how it is you've been holding back from going after what it is you want, receiving what it is you want, aligning with it, what it is you want. How is it you've been orienting to your dreams? As we work with that, we're going to simultaneously work with the concept of tantalization versus success. So, tantalization, to be tantalized by something, is like kind of a sexy thing. It's kind of a sexy thing in our world. In fact, I'm going to use a sex example to talk about it just for right now. There's a Greek myth that goes with this too. And as I talk about the sex part of it, it's like that moment right before orgasm. And there's this idea that if you can like extend that or stretch that out, there's before you even have orgasm, you're stretching out a period of like really delightful energy to experience, right? That moment right before orgasm. If you can expand that, if you can cycle within that and not even let yourself hit orgasm just yet, if we can just tantalize ourselves, if we can deny ourselves that immediate gratification, then we actually don't get it. We don't actually get the success of the actual orgasm itself. The myth of Tantalus is, I think I've spoken to this before, is, I won't go into the backstory, but Tantalus himself is placed in a pool of water, and any time, and a fruit tree is overhead. Anytime he's hungry and he reaches up, the tree moves away, so the fruit is just out of his reach. Anytime he's thirsty and he dips down into the water to grab a sip of water, the water moves just out of his reach. So he has everything that he needs and wants right there, yet never within grasp. It's only ever just there. It's not quite there, pardon me. So as we work with this idea, same deal, same concept, of tantalization versus success. It's like there's this some sort of delight that you've been taking in the barrier to actually receiving what it is you're looking for because of this conditioning that's present in so many things in our world. It's present in the ideas and the teachings that you have to deny yourself what it is you want in order to get it. To give somebody what it is you think you're lacking in order to receive it is not that. It's not that at all. It's actually the opposite of that. It's saying you actually already have it. We're actually just orienting you to where it is so you can call more of it in and notice where you're already successful and get you out of this loop of tantalization. Okay. And it's a fun game. We play with it with babies. We play with it with puppies. You know, I play this all the time, like with my dog. We'll just like dangle a toy, but never quite let him get it. I mean, ultimately, at some point, he gets it and he wins. But we find it playful. We find it exciting to never quite have what it is we're looking for. And I'm going to suggest that this is a time, especially in the next couple of days, since the astrology weather is hot for this, to turn towards and orient towards. The energetics around success, which is very much about I have the thing. Now I get to bring it back and I get to enjoy the shit out of it for myself. And all of that is playing out through the. Oh, let me see. I lost it. I had it for just a moment ago. Through the putamen in the brain. Putamen is a part of the limbic or the emotional brain that works with coordinated action. It works with the planetary energy of Saturn, which comes into play again in a strong way in a couple of days. And it works with a sense of our long-term habits and coordinating our actions. So here we're going to basically rewire the foundational habits and patterns you have around going after what it is you want and calling more into fruition the idea, the possibility, and the capacity to get what you want as well as to hold it, because Saturn gives structure. Saturn gives the capacity to creatively support the flow of life in actually landing into your form, into your container of you. Okay. Okay. We're then linking it into the motor nerves that feed your, particularly your hands. And this is also wired into, it's supposed to be wired into shortly after birth. Shortly after birth, babies are often lifted up to the breast to drink. And we're actually born with the innate capacity to crawl up to the breast and help ourselves to that drink. If we get lifted up to the breast to drink, then we actually learn that other people are just going to do things for us, and that success will just be something that we actually don't have to really struggle or work for or earn for. And nowhere in life does that actually come true. We actually do have to work for things to be successful. We actually do have to put in the cultivation of things. And it creates, in essence, in short, this air of entitlement to a degree. This air of thinking, like, well, I don't actually have to look at why that bothers me. I don't have to look at my feelings about that. I don't have to look at my behaviors around that. Yeah. I just want that to magically change without necessarily having to be curious or land things in my body and my nervous system or explore my intentions for something and see what comes alive in my own system and how I can orient myself to actually a new awareness, which might take hold in a new action for my system. Okay. You get the idea. And this is an oh so human thing. I know this too. I should have all my hands and my feet up. And we have parts of us that just simply learn that. And the idea is that we were meant to reach with our hand for the breast, to grab it, to bring it to us, and to breastfeed, and to satiate ourselves, and to receive the nourishment or the reward that comes after a long journey, after hard work. And then we were supposed to rest. Yeah. I'm going to suggest that your quality of rest isn't as supported by the fact that something was given to you out of entitlement. It doesn't reach the satiation, which allows for the deep rest in your nervous system to take hold or take place. That might show up in the form of insomnia. It might show up in the form of just feeling kind of like restless, like you're never quite satisfied with anything. An extreme, like ultra extreme example of this is like rich kids who just get fed things, but they didn't have to work for it. So they just had a sense of I want more, but they never actually feel content or happy with having earned them or having worked for those things. Yeah. And we all do this to some degree, regardless of how much money we have in our bank account or how much was given to us as kids. That all is linking into your solar plexus chakra. And we're working with a cycle of resentment that feeds around having what it is we want just given to us, or the other side of the coin, feeling like we have to never quite get what we want. We have to actually be in a cycle of tantalization. And both of those being opposite sides of the coin from actually having what it is you want to successfully receiving things. Tied into this in parallel at the same time as this, we're looking at the fear of if, which is sort of like on a related note, running parallel to this, a fear of if you don't work endlessly, ceaselessly, overachieve, give it your everything, over function to the hilt, then you might be dead. You could be annihilated. And there's a sense of having to work really hard to just barely eke out a life or barely eke out an existence or barely eke out, not even necessarily a reward, but maybe just like less severe punishments. And this idea that you had to compete to the actual death, maybe even yourself, to get what it is you were looking for. But then you wouldn't, in turn, also be able to have what it is you want and enjoy it. So it's just another face of that same sort of cycle. And that also comes with not just rage, not just anger, pardon me, but like rage. If I had a stronger word for rage, I would put it in here. We're linking that all into the 12th house, which is very much about releasing, surrendering, letting go, making space. And it's about doing it in a way that isn't necessarily logical. It's about doing it in ways that are more emotional and kind of intangible, which means that we can also receive satiation without it being linear or direct, but it might happen in ways that are kind of surprising or catch us off guard or come out of the blue. And related to all of that, we're unhooking the I'm going to say attitude of why isn't something just granted to me? Why isn't something just granted to me? And as we release that from the 12th house, making room for things to find their way to you and for you to be struck by inspiration to potentially realign your action to be more in the flow, I'm going to say, of how your particular system is wired. And nobody can tell you what to do because your system is uniquely wired. It's something that you need to learn and listen to within your own system for your own beingness, your own self. So we often get hooked into the loop of just somebody tell me what to do about that, which is another form of us not quite doing or orienting to the idea of that success is possible within our own system, within our own self. It's a form of low self-esteem. My puppy is making little sleepy whimpers in his dream, so you might be hearing some of those noises in the background, which is far more delightful than the barking I was possibly anticipating happening on this skull. Hallelujah for a puppy who's sleeping in a call. Okay. Feeling very grateful for receiving that right now, which was a bit of a surprise out of the blue. Yay, I'll take it. Okay. Thanks, River. Okay, that's linking in turn into, for whatever reason, this is very broad and vague, not all that anatomical, but brain tissue, like just like the tissue itself of the brain, the tissue of the nervous system. It's a different tissue than, other organs. It has like a different density. It has a different texture. It has a different feel to it. So working with like all those components to the actual tissue itself, and it's working with that expression, the brain is like a sponge. This might be too much information, but for someone who's dissected a cadaver or two in their lifetime, from medical school days, probably really good that I provide that context and say somebody doesn't know that about my backstory. I just always figure everybody knows that part of me, so I don't always talk about it a lot. But from the medical school days, when I dissected a couple of dead bodies, and also got to work with some live ones too in surgeries and things like that. Although I didn't work with anybody's brain directly. The idea is, so what I'm trying to say is, the brain has kind of like a spongy-like quality that other organs, body parts don't. It's a very different texture, and it kind of lives up to its name. Like, the brain is meant to be like a sponge in terms of how we learn. So we're looking with the brain texture, and we're finding literally the recultivation of the sponginess, as well as the capacity for it to be held within the cerebrospinal fluid, which I think of as a very primal, primordial fluid, storing all the same memories, experiences, notes, essences, tonalities that we experience in the womb space, held in the cerebrospinal fluid as well as in the fascia. I see it in both. So I've talked about it in both, likely at some point or another in this series. And as we support this, running lymphatic drainage through any areas of the brain tissue itself, which feels just a little bit rigid, which feels just a little bit, when a sponge is kind of like crusty because you got like some stuff on it and you left it and it dried out for a little bit, like it's kind of like rigid and hard. It just didn't quite get marinated in the joy that it was supposed to have, is the metaphor I'm going to link that to. Excuse me. Right on cue, I'm thirsty. We're actually linking this to hydration. Hydration for the brain tissue. Don't read anything into the fact that I really need a sip of water right now. And then it's linking into the endocrines. It's said that your brain has it's the organ that has the most estrogen receptors on it. And as we work with the impact of the brain, hydration, receiving estrogen in particular, supporting the system and feeling well nourished in those regards, we're literally balancing the endocrine system with the nervous system. This is the equivalent to making sure the royalty in your body are in good shape in their relationship. That there isn't like a coldness between the two of them, that one isn't rejecting the other, that they're in good shape talking to each other. Not a small thing to do. Okay, and that is linking into, I have my chart here, I'm just going to cheat and look here for something in particular. It's linking into the mammillary bodies, which I was a bit fuzzy on, so I had to just look up. And it's working with the quality of tastes as well as the behaviors around eating that are connected to that. So it's like it's use we're using it metaphorically in this case, and we're using it around the sense of like, where's your appetite for joy? Where's your appetite for the ease? Can you find a sense of taste or cultivate that again? And can we reorient your capacity to eat or feed to also remembering to orient to joy? The irony being is that like joy is never missing. It's always there amongst all the other emotionalities. In fact, it's how we actually take in joy. It's how we take in joy by means of working through and looking at what's behind the other emotional responses that we've created some personalization about, that we've created story about. And then we begin to, if we sit with them and contemplate them, and there's lots of different tools that do this, Byron Katie, the Sedona method, are a couple of really great ones to support our system in moving through those things. We begin to, or even just straight up contemplation, time and nature, lots of things. But the idea being, as you reorient your mammillary bodies, which are these like tiny little things that hang out just in the middle of your thalamus, or just in the bottom underside, roughly in the center of your thalamus, which is like the grand central station of your whole brain. Nothing gets in or out without going through this guy. It begins to set the foundational stage for everything to come in through the lens of joy, for everything to be made sense of also through the lens of joy. It begins to reorient one's heart to joy again. So as we begin to rewire things in this way, we're linking it up to the crown chakra. Lots of chakras today. And the crown chakra very much being about transcendence. It's about, well, in a way, purple color, royalty. It's about finding your sense of inner royalty between, I'm going to say, your capacity to hold in balance your own sense of dignity while feeling in connection with another. And as you honor your sense of dignity and connection, you allow for your system to be held in a way that is transcendent in experience, which is what the crown chakra represents. It's not about getting more out of it. And that's often a mistake. We often use it from a spiritual sense of, oh, I'll just let that go. I'll just move beyond that. I don't need to worry about that. And we forget actually the true essence of it, which is not about avoidance at all. It's not about spiritual bypassing at all. It's about churning towards the storm and getting into it. It's about being the buffalo and allowing yourself to go for gold and actually get into the messiness, to embrace the humanness, to notice, where you screwed that thing up, and to find some compassion as you explore that for yourself through whatever process feels right for you. Okay. All right. And then in turn, we're linking that into the entire digestive system itself to also support it in reorienting to be able to digest your life with the understanding of it's not here to meant to shame you. It's not here to meant to worsen or deepen into things. It's actually to support you, to help you in feeling the feelings that you may just have needed a little bit of time to get to, a little bit of resources to get to. And in turn, to be able to drink up the joy or the essence of goodness. In particular, it's highlighting the flavor of mother's milk. And we're using that metaphorically, not necessarily, although that's the way the babe first experiences it. As they receive breast milk, they begin to learn success. They begin to learn the taste of what that feels like. And they begin to align themselves later on in life with being able to successfully orient to grabbing the fruit, so to speak, and to drinking mother's milk in life is often used as a metaphor here in these regards. All right, if we haven't been Freudian enough, we're going to get just a little bit more Freudian. It's linking into Freud's concept of sex and death, saying those were the two primary motivations to do anything in life. And the idea of, I'm going to use these terms very loosely. So Eros was more the term, more than sex. And it's very much the instinct to have pleasure in one's life and the instinct to receive what felt good. And the death would be in alignment with the pain, which can cultivate, I'm going to say, the killer instinct to go after what it is you want. And often we think we should be timid, especially if we're raised as as females in our current world. We're often raised to think that we shouldn't be fierce, so we shouldn't be just as strong in a good way, our predatory nature to go after the kill, to hunger for the blood, to say, I want that and I'm going to get it. Yeah. We're trained to be soft or nice or good. And I'm going to say this whole session is a little bit about fuck that noise. And it's about finding a sense of what is it you want to orient to and being able to find that and in a way that provides you a sense of joy that you can also receive it and drink it in even further. And begin to repattern some of these cycles, some of these patterns that were learned intergenerationally, some of these behaviors that got reinforced through your expression of them as an individual. I'm going to run that for the next 12 days. It's just going to take us to very early March, to March 2nd. I don't know what the astrology is happening then, but all I know is right now we're in like. And I don't even know the specifics. I just know we're in like a really hot time. So like the next 6 weeks and really whole year is just like, wow, there's a lot of unique things happening that we just don't see a lot of very frequently. So it sets the stage for a lot of unique things to happen. So if you're looking for some sort of a unique turn or expression or corner to turn, you're going to be very well supported in these times. Okay, that in turn is linking into the QL muscles, the quadratus lumborum muscle, in particular on the right side. So it hangs in the low back and it gives a sense of stability and solidity. And it can be impacted a lot by our, as all muscles can, our emotional states. And in particular, the anger that's here right now is creating a sense of rage around. Pardon me, rage that's also held back, rage that's also like directed inward, rage that says I shouldn't actually be allowed out there. So in turn, there's a sense of if I can't use my killer instinct to attack out there, I gotta put it somewhere. So let me direct it inward at me, which in turn is creating a destabilization of the low back, which is not quite foundational, but it's what comes right after the foundation. It's kind of like it's like not the formation of your vitality, but it's like the vitality itself being compromised to some degree or another and being destabilized. Meaning it might show up in the form of I just don't have the energy that I want. I feel kind of tired, I feel fatigued, I feel burnt out. To some degree, it's linking into the part of you that actually likes to compete or knows how to compete and wants to compete. And it needs a, I'm going to say, a broader playing field or a cleaner playing field. You might, for some of you might already have a playing field. And your competitor just wants like more. It wants like, let me go, let the racehorse race, so to speak. Let me compete. And for some of you, your inner competitor just needs a clean playing field. Like it's not supposed to play out in competing in relationships. That just creates toxicity, you know? Or I'm not gonna belabor it, but there's this idea of it wants to do it in ways that are actually creating a sense of being able to build momentum for you, not to destabilize it. It's not meant to do anything other than be of support for you. And we're linking that into the eyes, consciousness of a vision. And your competitor likely already has a vision of what it wants to do, and it's looking like to literally sync that up to your own eyeballs, to help it to register, to help it to be seen, as well as to be computed through all the parts of our brain that compute vision. Then we're linking that into the brainstem. We're working specifically with the quality of consciousness level or level of alertness. Like, even if the vision is synced up, how alert are you to it? How awake are you to it? How aware are you of it? So you can be synced up and have it not be in your awareness and not be able to like be in consciousness to it. You might not register in the conscious mind. Yeah. Since we support that, we're then linking it to your centers of doing, your limbs and your head primarily. So arms, legs, and head. And the centers of doing in part are, let me just find the right words here. It's like they're just a little, and I don't mean this in the sense of like you're klutzy or uncoordinated in some way like that, but there's a sense of internally between all five of those areas, there's just a subtle mistiming that's not allowing for the actual flow or coordination to come through all of them at the same time. It's like instead of instruments playing in tune to create music, it's creating like a clash that's not in support of how things are supposed to flow through your rhythm and your pace. And in part that's happening because you're actually not honoring your rhythm or pace. And in part that's happening because you learned not to do that when you were little through six ways of Sunday, primarily related to birth, infancy, how your caregiver said, this is the schedule you should be on, this is how things should be, and then you were supposed to just contort to their rhythm. And to the point where we just think that's the way it is, and that's how we do it, and we replicate it without reevaluating it and going, actually, that doesn't really work for me. I don't want to do things that way. I want to do things this way. And even if you have done that to a degree, I'm going to suggest there's more to go. And you may need to be reevaluating your current pace and your current rhythm of how you do things. I was joking with my partner the other day that my desire for schedule is enigmatic. I love routine and I also love novelty. And I'm like, what's in the middle? Like, if routine and novelty had a baby, what would that be? And my example that I came up with was jazz. So like my rhythm is routine and novelty at the same time, which I think metaphorically a lot. And to me that came through in like jazz. My rhythm is jazz. It's like, you know how jazz has like the song that has like the general flow and general rhythm, but every once in a while someone will go off and do some sort of a funky solo that's just like badass, and they come back into like the routine and the rhythm of the song again. It's like, yeah, that's what I want. I want a routine, but I also want to have like novelty injected into it in some fun ways. Which is very different from what I learned. I learned a very disciplined rhythm. I learned a very, it doesn't matter if you're tired or anything else, this is what the rhythm is, and this is what you're going to honor. We don't change it for anything. Yeah. Your feelings are inconsequential to it. Your health is inconsequential to it. Follow this one rhythm and don't ever stop. And it was at a pace usually that was much higher than my nervous system could sustain. So part of learning our pace and rhythm is also learning like where's our limit, where's like too much, where's too little. So those are a couple of different ways I'm going to talk about it. And I'm using examples to spark ideas for you to find your rhythm and to tune into what that is and what comes alive for you amongst it all. And being able to find that within your own essence by means of listening to your rhythm, not to take on mine. Okay. All to say all of that is linking into the heart, consciousness of your fire and how it is it wants to express in ways that need to be honored to light you up, to shine your radiance, to illuminate through you without creating a burning out. Okay. Tapping here, breathing here, receiving here. And as I see it linking into the heart, I see it linking into like your natural heartbeat, not that anxious heartbeat that kicks up, but the natural heartbeat that's here before it learns the pattern of anxiety. Okay, giving that breath. Letting yourself rest here. And letting yourself center in that resource if it feels like that's something that is calling to you, or allowing yourself to just simply be here. There's a song called You Can't Go Wrong. I think of it as in alignment with that quality that we were talking about listening to your essence for you, that no one else can do that for you. And it's about just shy of 4 minutes. It's by Gone, Gone, Beyond. Okay. And I think also the human experience is a part of that as well, too. Okay, loves. Feel free to drink this on in.
Let's quit our jobs and wander off. You know you can't be found if you don't get lost. Let's say goodbye to those we love. Spend a little time chasing down the sun.
Thank you for the opportunity to gather here today in these ways, and thank you for being here exactly as you are. What sweet medicine it is. Kalsai to life. Mwah. Wishing you a beautiful week. You're most welcome, everybody. If anybody wants any extra support or conversation about anything, let me know. I'm right here. I'm going to stop the recording here so you can do that.